You're listening to Two Guys Talking Wine with Michael Pincus and Andre Prue.
I don't think even we thought we would make it this far.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
I did not think I'd even like you. You tried to steal my website.
I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, you've heard that origin story where, like, the radio station literally threw me on the air, and it was like, I don't know. I didn't feel like branding it after myself, like, you know, and now here we are literally 14 years later and I'm still Andre Wine Review.
Well, see, I never branded it myself. It was always Ontario Wine
Review. You stole mine. You stole it from me.
I always had that. And then now I'm, I own both, but it's Michael Pincus Wine Review. Somebody told me you should brand it after yourself, which is funny. You didn't want to brand it after yourself.
Yeah. And then you stole it.
You stole mine.
No. I stole it for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, you tried to.
I lightly borrowed it.
And then, now, on the other hand, the funny part is, if CFRB had said, we'll take you to court, you could have had it very easily because it was not registered. So.
And I think I had a former employer that if he wanted to back me, was enough of a jerk that he might have done that. Anyways, I think this is the first time we've actually made a big deal out of our milestones.
Yeah, we're not really milestone people. Like, I even asked Alexa what 350 is. And she gave me some kind of, I don't know, number that, like I said, what is the 350th anniversary? And it's a try, send something. So I was like, no, I'm not even going to try to say it. So,
yeah, I'll be honest. Like, I had a bit of a hard time coming up with a format for the episode. But I think it's a kind of emblematic of, like, where our careers have gone as wine writers. Because, like, I'll be honest, like... I still think we're trying to learn from each other.
I think we do learn from each other.
But when we
You're
first...
wrong so many times that that's it's fine. Hard to learn anything from you. But
yeah, okay. No, I think our listeners would disagree with that, but...
Whatever.
I think like when we started, it was very much more of a mentor-mentee relationship, and it's interesting to reflect on that when we get back to this. And, you know... for our homework for this, I tried to say, like, let's try to find just some, like, really good wines to open and reflect on what 350 episodes means. And I had a hard time picking out a bottle because I don't have a lot of, like, really great older bottles because I couldn't afford good wines when we started this podcast.
Well, we've done many a podcast where I've just pulled out my $10 bottles that are, you know, 20 years old or whatever, and we're like... Let's see what happens.
Deer hunter style, playing Russian roulette.
Yeah, so that's, and I think that's, I think the one thing that I have learned from doing that is that, well, first of all, wine is always a learning experience. And number two, I think it is kind of fun to open 10 bottles of wine that you think are absolutely going to be garbage and find that one gem. And that makes it worth it.
I like to live dangerously, and I'm at the point where, like, I can't afford really, like, large volume, really great wines. Like, you know, I'm signed up to the Halpern mailing list, and it's like wine porn, right? Like, when you get the offers, like, they had a Clos de Vougeot offer from Louis Jadot earlier this year. I kept that email in my inbox way longer than I should have, and, like, we're talking about wines that are, like, $250 and up a bottle, and it's just like... And I can maybe afford to buy one of these once in a while.
Andre looks at them and I want to peel your label.
Okay, well, full disclosure, I bought a bottle of the Penfolds Bin 389 Cab Shiraz that we tasted. And I actually bought that because of the learning experience. Because, like, especially with the ADX Wine Company, you know, I'm coming to places in my wine career where I like to think that I'm getting certain answers. And one of the answers I thought I got to had to do with French oak. I didn't think that American oak can be used to make wonderful, elegant wines. And the thing is, like, I've mentioned this. You've mentioned this to my business partner, like, with Vadim, who uses some American oak in the Cassava Syrahs. And mentioned this to definitely friend of the podcast, Derek Barnett, who I think uses a little bit of American oak with some of his Syrahs as well.
I've also noticed that in Ontario, they're starting to use a little bit in Cab Franc as well, just to give it a little, not a lot, like a little 10%, something like that. But it gives it some kind of, I guess you can't be totally, you know, Kistler about it and just throw your wine into new American oak and, you know, watch it, you know, just turn into buttered toffee. And
I get the feeling that Kistler's French, just over toasted. That's something we'll have to look that up. You know what? You said that, okay, so I said that I want to bring like one really good bottle of wine to open with you, and I had a crazy busy day at work, so it's actually in the fridge chilling right now.
So you only brought one wine to this party?
Well, we're going to be recording a second podcast where there's 12 wines, but I did only bring one wine to this party because I'm fairly certain it's going to be good, and I really feel like the wine I picked is kind of a bit of a representation of, I think, the Venn diagram of where our personalities converge a little bit.
So it's a Chardonnay, is it?
It is a Chardonnay, but it's not just any Chardonnay. And it's not something weird. It's like, I don't know. I really wanted to open up something I'm really excited to drink, and a winery that like really inspires me, and one where like when I get my chance to buy it or taste it, I like knock down the door and like yabba dabba doo to the nearest store to buy it. So it is a special bottle that I wasn't planning on opening quite yet, but today's the day. We got to do that.
So you kind of, I think you gave me a different
well, we changed our mind a few times,
and you said open wines that you've been waiting to open and that have meaning. And so I went with a little bit of everything here. And then I think we had a couple others. So I went with three wines that... now, are we doing this blind? Is that what we're doing?
Well, I wasn't planning on making this blind, but I kind of changed it to blind after I saw you made it blind. And now, like, I was actually taking a look at my Facebook memories today. We're recording this on April 17th, and it is the 6-year anniversary of the great Kentucky wine that we opened for.
Oh, geez, that was some terrible wine. You know, what people don't also realize is that we are the longest running wine podcast in Ontario and the second longest running wine podcast in Canada.
And I think even then it's on a tiny bit of a technicality, but also because I don't want to get into a fight with Terry David Mulligan.
I do not.
Think it's a radio show that just happened to
turn into a podcast. Okay. So
who, by the way, we're actually in talks with about having on a podcast in the near future as well.
Yeah. We've been hearing a lot. We'll get into it probably in the next episode.
Next
351.
Yeah.
So I've broken the cork, but it's a clean break. I think I can get this out.
Actually, it's great. I saw what it was, and if it was what I think it was, this bottle actually does have some personal meaning to me.
Damn it, I'm going to lose the cork. So did you see what it was?
Yeah, I know that Ravine Vineyard has a habit of making small batches of magnums.
Correct. So,
and they don't label them, they write on them with a glass like a glass marker.
Did you see the vintage?
I didn't see the vintage, which is what I'm curious about. Okay. Is this 2012?
No.
2010?
It is a 2010. So this is the 2010 Meritage. And the reason that this bottle I brought is because, one, you don't get the open magnums very often because this is in magnum. And number two, this is the very first magnum, believe it or not, that I ever had in my cellar. It was from, and 2010 was a great vintage.
Did you pay for this?
They gave it to me as a gift.
I had done a
few videos for some of their wines, and they were nice enough to say, you know, thank you very much for doing those videos. I'm pretty sure it was like when they were new too. And they were like very impressed. So
Anya and I, that same vintage, we bought a bottle of the Cab Sauve.
Oh.
And that was our first joint. Like, that was the first bottle of wine we went in together on.
So freshly opened.
Yeah, this is delicious.
little on the foresty floor, obviously, which you would.
Oh, I don't know. I'm getting fruit. I'm getting like dried cherries, like tons of dried cherries. It's still got some primary, like.
There's still some life left in that bottle.
Like raspberry, strawberry, cranberry, leaning towards the dried, not overripe. Tannin is silky smooth. What is this you say? Let me do my impression of Michael. I'm Michael. I'm wrong all the time. This is a Lionel Richie wine.
I think it will turn into a Lionel Richie wine. I think it's a little grumpy right now.
Oh, I don't think this is grumpy at all. I think it's behaving quite well.
Oh, I think it's just a touch. It's a touch grumpy to me, but I believe there's still enough life left in this bottle that it's going to be. In about an hour, maybe two, this is going to be something we're very excited about.
Maybe we should put it into a decanter.
Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe this just means I have to hang around the studio a couple hours.
You know, the whole decanter thing is a relative. I never knew that you had strong feelings about decanters until like recently. Have I just been not paying attention?
We've never decanted anything, or that has never come up. You've never said, hey, let's go decant something. Yeah. I find the decanting, and I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the podcast, it's like reading the first chapter and then reading the last chapter of a book, or watching the first 5 minutes of a show and then watching the last 5 minutes of a show. Like,
I get the analogy.
Like a mystery show, like Law and Order. Who did it? Did he, you know, and then seeing that they threw him in jail. You know, you miss the whole investigation. And I think that's what wine is about. If you're willing to really see where a bottle of wine is going, then you should be investigating it in the course of an evening.
I get your point. And I three-quarters agree with you. I mean, that's when I really needed to think about this carefully, because I'll be honest, I don't often decant wines. And the thing is, like, now that you know, now that I've got a decent cellar and like it's getting a little bit bigger, the bottles of wine is getting a little bit better. You know, I'm at the point where I'd rather just open a bottle when it's ready to be drunk. And obviously, as a critic, I'm tasting wines before making a choice of buying them. Like that bin $3.89 that I bought, like I'm planning on opening that 5 years from now. And I know that, and I know I can be patient for that. But
I think you're still going to be committing infanticide, but I know you don't like older wine.
No, I like those wines when they're in their youth and the tannin starts to fall off. I guess it's the other reason why I don't really do a ton of decanting. But, you know, once in a while, like I'll get like a Brunello or a Barolo that shows up at this house young. I don't really want to go on that journey of like harsh tannin or like a Sagrantino. Like, I don't want to do the harsh tannin bit. I just want to get to the part where it's like ready to drink.
So a Roxette wine.
Yeah. Don't bore us, cut to the chorus. Yeah. So like I'll use a decanter on those wines, right?
I get it.
Okay. Wait. Is this the first time in 350 episodes where we're kind of agreeing to disagree?
Well, I have a similar kind of thing where I would open a bottle like this Ravine, and I have a single glass decanter.
Yep.
That I can stick on the edge of the bottle, and that's where I go, I don't know whether this is going to be worth the time. So you taste the wine and you go, I don't know. So there's some fruit, maybe there's some secondary and some tertiary characteristics. I want to know whether I want to invest the evening on it, and I will grab the single glass decanter, put it on the end, pour myself a glass, and go yes or no. I'll make the decision. Yes, I want to go on this journey, or no, it's going to flatten out, and I'm not going to be that excited.
You can always hyper decant.
Are you doing that? What is that?
Have you Succession? Seen? Have you not seen Succession?
I've seen Succession. I missed the last season. That's the problem.
Okay. So this is where I'm going to put the clip from Succession.
What's said? What's in the smoothie?
Burgundy.
I'm sorry.
I hyper decant. You don't hyper decant. You're just doing regular decanting.
If by regular decanting you mean pouring into my open mouth, yeah.
You should hyper decant. It softens the tannins, heightens the aromas. You can age your wine 5 years and 10 seconds. Truly.
I love it when shows show rich a-holes, like, just mucking up wine. Like,
just because.
Well, I wrote a really great article for a comic book website, CGM, when Daredevil came out 10 years ago. And I'll... I'll link it in the show notes for anyone who wants to read it, because the headline is How to Drink Wine Like a Supervillain. Thing is, I went down a rabbit hole on this one. This was like bigger than my Picard rabbit hole that we did a few years ago.
I didn't see this article.
I think this was like pre-podcast.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, like, I knew enough about wine to know that, like, the main character, who is the supervillain, Kingpin, Wilson Fisk, was, like, faking his way through it. And every time he made a wine reference, it was, like, just a little bit wrong. But it's how, like, a person who's trying to fake sophistication would talk about wine. And the thing I still don't know is whether that was written deliberately on purpose, like, or it was written by someone who just didn't know wine and it plays off as a quirk of the character.
So because you're talking about cartoons and or comic books and things that have happened just recently, and we got into a discussion about this a while back, and we just couldn't create the podcast that we wanted to out of it. And so I was watching something that I know you read.
Oh, this book means a lot to me.
So this was something you read.
Yes.
And I am now watching it on
Apple Plus. You're watching something that's completely different from the book. That's the thing that you need to know.
Okay, but it's called Drops of Gone.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you and I had this off-microphone debate about whether Ontario should be making Piquette.
Okay.
I'm against it. I think it's garbage wine. I even looked it up. And to the French, it's garbage wine.
Yeah, the word Piquette means garbage wine.
Correct. And in episode 4, he even uses the word Piquette. And I was like, all right, there's the... to describe it, a champagne that he hates. And I was like, why?
People, okay, but
drop Piquette. You want to call it something else? But calling it Piquette... he's not a bright idea.
Yeah, but it's a trend that transcends the definition of that word. They've taken it back. But it's the other thing where, Michael, you're kind of contradicting one of the whole cores of this podcast, is when we've talked a lot about like what a piss-poor job the LCBO does serving us, the rally cry that we make is that we want the market to decide. And the thing is, as much as you and I both have a disdain for it, the market has decided. The market has decided with Piquette and... You know, the good news is I think we're on the back end of the trend. I hope we are.
I really think
it's going to be dying. Okay, why did you pour such a big glass?
Because I want you to drink, you little bastard. It's a celebration. We should be drinking.
But yes, I don't know. I don't have the disdain for Piquette that you do.
I do. I think, or find a different name for it.
Well, what else would you call it?
Crap wine.
I don't know. I find it amusing that you've taken it back, and it's like a tongue-in-cheek way of calling it. I think it's brilliant marketing.
So, this bottle does have a place.
In my mouth.
And the place is where this was a bottle that you recommended. You said it should lie down, but you did not have the patience to lie down. And I think you drank both of your bottles. And I had two bottles, and the first bottle I opened up, which was a couple of years ago, was terrible. And you were like, oh my God, maybe it shouldn't have lied down. But then we both decided that maybe it had gone to a dumb phase. So we're about to find out what it is.
Is this Syrah?
Actually, that's much better than that.
This is really good. The men... Rush Audrang Cesar.
Did you not tell me to buy this wine?
Nope. I don't think I've ever had this.
Oh. I was positive this was the wine that you told me to buy, and we both bought two bottles.
That ain't me. Maybe it was your sister.
Hmm. No, my sister's not in the wine.
I'm not disappointed by this, though. This is really yummy.
I do not know how I ended up with this wine then. I thought it was yours.
Nope.
What was the wine that you told me to buy, which was a Syrah? And then we had opened it years later, and I said it was terrible.
Oh, the Domaine de Remisier St. Joseph that we got on like clearance.
Oh, okay. So that's the big one. Okay, well, then guess what? It's another moment where I've lost something in my cellar, thought it was you, was not. And what year is that, Andre?
2012, and it's 100% Grenache.
Oh, this is delicious.
This is really, really yum.
Wow, I'm now shocked and upset that I opened it up. It still has years to go.
I just think it's hilarious that you have so many bottles that you forgot. That
is now, compared to the Ravine, this thing's... There's no comparison.
Well, you kind of killed the story on that. Well, I mean, this has definitely got more body, more alcohol.
I didn't kill the story. I was telling a story. I didn't realize I had...
Yeah, but like... There was no story with this one. You literally just grabbed the bottle of wine at random.
I literally thought this was the Domaine Remisière, which I for some reason, it's got a very, I thought it had a similar label.
Ish, yeah, I'd agree with that.
And that's what I thought, that was the wine. And I had literally put it down thinking that it was that wine.
Oh, that's too funny.
And I thought, okay, well, you and I are going to, because I remember trying the Remisière and going, this is terrible. And then I'm going to put the other bottle down.
I don't think it was terrible. I think it was thin. I think we use the word thin.
It was thin on fruit and long on wood. Whereas this one is absolutely stunning. So,
man, now I wish we had the Domaine Remisière, because that's the thing where, like, knowing now what I know is, like, that was one of the first places in France where I could say they were pulling back on wood use. Like, Domaine Remisière is moving from the 225 liters to puncheons, and that was, I guess, nearly a decade ago that I visited them.
So, yeah.
All right, well, let's make sure we keep this going so we don't drag on too long. This is wine number three that you brought.
Yeah. Now...
Okay, is this one that we actually enjoyed together?
No. We have never tried this wine together, but...
Is it Charublas?
It is not, because the last time I opened a Charublas...
It was not good.
It was not good.
Yeah, it was really not good.
And it was really sad.
It was sad.
And we had talked to Thomas Batchelder about it, and we even told him the vintage. We told him the producer, and he went, oh, that should have been great. And it was not.
It was not. No, it really wasn't.
So this one is a wine that I found in the cellar and that I had said to you, oh, I should bring this.
This tastes Bordeaux.
Good for you, Andre. I'm very proud.
What? How wrong am I?
No, you're right. It is Bordeaux.
Yeah, it's I'm guessing Left Bank? Maximum 10 years old. There, I'm going Drops of God on you. For anyone who hasn't seen the show. It's Right Bank.
Yeah.
It is 13 years old.
Yeah.
This is exactly the sweet spot where I love these wines.
So it's a Chateau Clinet Pomerol 2011. And I had promised you to bring this wine at one point because we were supposed to have Penelope Irving on, who is a friend of the podcast, and she has changed occupations to work in the faux beer industry.
Yeah, well, that's still going to happen at some point this year.
We are going to do that.
Yeah.
And I had tried to sweeten the pot to get her on earlier by telling her this is the wine I had, and she could not make the podcast date. And I showed up, and you said, where's the Clinet? And I said...
I say a lot of things. Man, I really am kind of a jerk to you, eh?
Yeah. And I said, well, Penelope didn't show up, so I didn't bring it. And Penelope didn't show up again, but I still brought it.
Man, you know what? I'm hoping for... In the next 50 episodes, you know, it's one thing I just want to acknowledge on the podcast is because you've been really kind and generous with the wines that you have brought to this house, because you catalog wine cellars and have been lucky enough to get your hands on some choice bottles. Like, I do think the most memorable bottle that you ever brought to my house was the Paul Hubbs Tokalon, the Becksoffer Tokalon Cab Sauve, and that was like... I don't know, as much as we bicker, and we're now at the point where we're arguing because we don't agree on everything in the wine world, the fact that you've been incredibly supportive of my wine education and been incredibly supportive of the self-guided wine education, and that you've been really, you've been amazing at helping me. You've done so much to help me by sharing these really great bottles, and you're one of the reasons why I'm spending so much money on wine these days.
I might cry.
I'm not sure if that was a compliment.
I'm not sure either. This this Clinet I think is better than that that Paul Hobbs. This might be one of the better wines that we have tried that is old.
I don't think in this house.
Let's go with in this house.
I don't think it's a fair comparison because like the thing I love about I love about wines is often. Like, people on this podcast have heard me compare wines to music. I know I'm infringing on, like, Michael Goodell style when I do that, but, like, sometimes it just, like, it comes out. I like comparing wines to sports teams, like first line, second line, third line. But I also like comparing wines to cars. And, like, the thing is, like, that Paul Hobbs Cab Sauv was more like a Corvette, right? Like, especially the new Corvette, a little angular, you know... It just, it's got this, like, broadness and this, you know, I know we're not supposed to say masculine, feminine anymore, but this, like, you know, raw power and masculinity to it.
I will now fight you to the grave for that one, because, you know what, the Italians do it, the French do it. Why in North America are we against it? Like, I mean, it's
because we're dealing with an industry.
Are we that much further advanced than the Europeans are? I don't think we are. They can still call their wines masculine and feminine, and they know what they mean by it. And I think we all know what we all mean by it. And I'm not saying that women are more delicate, all of them, and I am not saying that, you know, men are always strong and big, but I think it still puts an idea in one's head of what a wine is like, and we should really stop with the politically correct.
I don't agree with you because we are working in an industry that is ripe with misogyny. We're dealing with an industry where it is still male dominated, and frankly, if making better choices of language are going to help in a subtle way guide the industry in a direction that it's going to be more welcoming to women, that's a change I'm willing to make.
And I want more women to come in. We have some great women here in Ontario.
Yeah, Kelly, okay. Mason, so if some of these women come to you and say that, hey, Michael, like, do you need me to get a petition started that says, like, how many women does it take to tell you that changing your language will make the industry feel more inclusive? How many women does it take?
Here's what I would like to find out. I would like to find out, and maybe for our 350th episode, we now throw that out to people who are out there. One, do you understand masculine and feminine when we talk about wine? And two, are you really offended? And I'd really like to hear from the women winemakers.
Yeah, I don't want to hear from the men on this. No, I only want to hear from the women on this.
Women. I want to hear women winemakers. I want to hear women in the industry. Are you offended when somebody calls a wine masculine or feminine? Or do you understand what that means and you're like, that's, you know, just some language of wine. We say all kinds of stupid things when we say to wine. We're like, oh, I really like the 20-year-old. I really like the 10-year-old. Do you know how wrong that sounds when you're talking? Granted, we're talking about port. But you know what?
That's an asinine comparison, and you know it.
No, because it also sounds sexist, and it also sounds ageist.
That's a stretch. That is a stretch long shot.
Although I am really liking this Clinet.
You know, I appreciate you trying to make the argument, but okay, we'll leave it to the audience, and there's no
You know what? If we have some female winemakers out there who would like to get on the microphone and talk about it, we'd love to have you on.
Well, not even necessarily female winemakers. Any women in the industry that are bothered. In the industry.
Correct. Okay. I have some ideas as well.
I have had people talk about that to me.
No, I don't. Okay. See, I don't. I would rather go with the old world with the way they're still going. They've been making wine for a lot longer than we have. Why we're so opposed to using those terms when I think people understand them. And I'm not passing judgment on...
Heaven forbid we make progress as an industry. Heaven forbid we make progress because change is uncomfortable, Michael. Okay, so after all of that, the point I was just trying to make is where the Paul Hobbs Tokalon Cab Sauv feels more like an American-made car.
Which is an American wine, yes. So it's the like Clinet, a Ford Mustang kind of thing?
No, like I said, the new Corvette.
Okay.
Which also has European inspiration now that the engine's in the back. Did you know that? You did not know that. You're just not a car person.
No, I'm not a car person.
The Clinet feels more like a Ferrari or a Maserati. Like, so it's just got curves to it.
So you're talking about butt stuff.
Butt stuff?
It's in the back.
Okay, Michael.
The engine's in the back.
Okay, Michael. I love how, like, you're basically just, like, you're giving up on any sort of, like, progressiveness whatsoever.
Well, you've just called the Kleenex Italian. It's not. It's French.
No, I said it's got the feeling like an Italian car if we're comparing the Kleenex to the Tokalon. Because
the French really don't make a car unless you call it Citroën, and then you're in a lot of trouble to begin with.
Oh, you should see the Alpine.
Actually, you know what? When I was in Provence, I drove a Citroën, and I was quite happy with it.
There we go. Nice backtracking. So if you're working for Sopexa listening to this podcast...
It was an SUV, and it was actually... I was shocked by how well it drove, and I'm like, I can't believe I'm driving this lemon.
The Citroën C3 Aircross was the single worst car I've ever driven in my entire life.
That's another story, but this thing was great. I was supposed to get a small car. I ended up with an SUV. It was great.
So all now, right, we got
where is this wine that you've thrown in the freezer?
All right, I'm feeling a little bit guilty because I think this is the first time we've raided your cellar, and it's been like the great Sum 41 album, All Killer, No Filler. You can look that one up later, Michael. It's actually a current pop culture reference.
I heard Pearl Jam's got a new album coming out. Seriously, it's called Dark Matter or something? They say it's their best stuff they've ever done. Heard it on the radio. Heard them talk about it.
And you're crazy about a Mercury.
Crazy about a Mercury. And Beyonce's done a country album, so the world is upside down and topsy-turvy.
There's a difference between it actually being good and saying that they think it's the best thing.
Okay, you're not on the microphone. You're not a part of this.
Oh, another country's heard from for the third time, and she's feisty tonight.
I know, no kidding.
Jesus, thank God we didn't give her a microphone. Holy God.
All right. So there's a glass of Chardonnay in your glass.
Me too tonight.
There's a glass of Chardonnay in your glass. And the thing is...
There's a glass of Chardonnay in your glass.
Okay, the Chardonnay in your glass. I don't think I would be Captain Chardonnay if it wasn't for this podcast. In spite of all the ribbing, teasing, the Chardonnay content, we basically went 2 years turning it into a running joke, etc. Like, I felt that I had to bring a Chardonnay to the table, but...
Table.
It's been a while. I'm going to let that one go. But I wanted to bring something, like I said, like something really good that I was just saving. And like, so this is a winery that...
Before you go on, I would like to say that, yes, you know, 350 episodes, it's time that we, you know, pull back the curtain a little.
Yeah.
There has been some shtick going on this podcast where, you know... I make fun of Andre about his love of Chardonnay. If it says Chardonnay on the label, it's got to be on his table. But I will grant him that over the years, there has been Chardonnay on the table that you have given the big thumbs down to more times than I thought. I thought for sure. And for people out there, I do have an ABC card, but I really know what I like in Chardonnay. And there are times that I gravitate towards a Chardonnay. And just before you can tell me what this is, Andre, I haven't tasted it yet, but the nose is fantastic. Like, I am all over this like a dirty shirt. And I have been to Chablis tastings that I absolutely adore. And if you look at my video series, probably of all the white wines, there's been more Chardonnay than any other white wine.
I mean... I'll admit I'm a little less discriminate than you are, because the thing is, I actually do have a soft spot in my heart for heavily oaked Chardonnay when it is done well. But I know my favorite wines, like I said, this is partly your fault, is like I've really fallen truly, deeply, madly in love with the Côte d'Or in Burgundy. And like...
Truly, madly, deeply do?
What, is that a Savage Garden reference?
Yes, that's a Savage Garden.
Holy crap, that was actually a relatively current pop culture reference. That's amazing. That's only from 1998, man. But, like, the thing is...
This isn't a Mercury chart, is it?
You can get white Mercury.
I know. That's why I said this is not. If that would be so hilarious if you pulled out a Mercury Chardonnay.
No, my favorite thing about working in this industry is when... we can find inspiration. And the thing about this podcast that I've been really grateful for is it's opened doors to let me find inspiration. And it's I can't wait to revisit this winery, because when I met the proprietor, it was like a 24 karat dose of inspiration. All right, so I know I blind tasted the Bordeaux. Can you humor me a little bit?
I have no idea. This is Burgundy, obviously.
It's not Burgundy.
It's not Burgundy. All right.
But...
Because I was positive that it was a Burgundy, and I remember that you had gone to Burgundy, and you had met some lady who was, like, selling wine at below market price, and...
I have some of her wines in the cellar, and we'll drink them together. I'm actually having patience for her wines.
See, that's the one... That's what I thought we were at the moment.
No, this is another... I actually met this individual before meeting, and what you were talking about is Clotilde Bergeret Effi in Nolay in France, who I've visited 3 times, and I keep going back, and next time I go there, I'm going to go back. No, this is a different producer. And it's not French. It's not French.
So,
but I could say 100% clear inspiration from the French is
so,
where this
so knowing
is.
Where you've been and where you would have brought a blind back, this is American then?
This is American.
So this is an American. I would like to say Paul Hobbs.
It's but not.
It's not.
Paul Hobbs is more of the like...
He's more in the Kistler line.
Traditional. He has restraint and... Like, the vanilla notes get integrated. Like I said, I have a soft spot in my heart for that style of Chardonnay.
This is under 10 years old.
Yes.
Okay. Because I am of the opinion that Ontario doesn't go over 7. I don't think the Americans, for the most part, go over 10. Although the French, yes, I have had some stuff from Burgundy over 10, and I'm like, yes, that's good, but I've never had an American over 10.
This was sealed with a Diam 30 cork,
so good for 30 years,
which means that the person who put this in bottle felt that the wine might sit in some people's cellars a little longer. First off, do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
I think this wine's like fabulous.
This is killer.
Yeah, this is good. Killer.
This has got a little bit of buttery toasted caramel.
Yeah.
But there is like a caramel apple, right? But it's not just any caramel apple. It's a caramel green apple. So you get that really, really sweet exterior, but then you bite into it and you get that Granny Smith kind of bite of acidity. So there's a balance here.
But it's like while you're eating it, off in the distance, like Granny's cooling an apple pie on the counter where like you're getting like a whiff of the spice. It's not really in the wine. It's just like it's like just a whisper of it.
Yeah, there's a whisper of cinnamon. There's a lot going on in here. So... I'm going to go at 7 years old. Maybe Sonoma.
Not Sonoma.
Napa.
Not Napa.
Really? You know where I really like? I love Monterey, but I'm sure
not
you don't
Monterey.
So I'm going to... It can't be Paso Robles because...
It's not Paso.
So, throw it open. But it is 7 years old. There is a sweet spot here.
This is from Irie. 2018.
Oh, what? So it's Oregon.
The Irie Vineyard Chardonnay.
Yeah, so it's Oregon. Well, which makes a lot more sense to me now, the acidity.
And to me, I just...
I forgot you'd been to Oregon.
I love the hubris that Jason Lett, who's looking after the vineyard that his father planted on ungrafted vines. You know, there's a little bit of stubbornness that exists at that winery, which reminds me of you. His original plot of Pinot Noir is slowly dying of phylloxera, and he's trying to find the cure for it, so he waits till the vines die before replanting them.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
I know, but it's, I don't know, the hubris, but also the quality of the wines coming from the vineyard. So this is something where I drop everything to get my hands on these bottles whenever I can when they're available. I have a small stockpile. This is the second oldest bottle that I have because I'm going to hold the oldest one a little longer.
2018.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. I'm
6 years old.
6 years old. So I wasn't that far off.
Yeah. And I would bet you, if anything,
I forgot you'd been to Oregon, or that you're big into Oregon, because Oregon probably makes some of the best Chardonnay in the U.S.
and underrated, because yeah. they stumbled. And it's the other thing too, where when you talk about inspiration, Oregon gives me inspiration because, kind of like Ontario, they sort of stumbled out of the blocks in establishing their identity. Like, they have, you know, Pinot Gris is their second most planted grape after Pinot Noir. And at most wineries, their Pinot Gris is the second most expensive wine. So Chardonnay is usually a bargain.
I find the Chardonnay to be delicious. So thank you for sharing that. That's probably one of the first you pull out of your cellar that I'm like, wow, that I'm really liking that.
I told you, these were special occasion wines. That was the point of the podcast.
Usually you pull out these old...
like $20 Ontario ones. I'm like, this is going to be a good idea.
Here's 10 Ontario Chardonnays. It should be great. They're over 10 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've smartened up. Although the 16-mile Chardonnays still do age quite gracefully.
Correct. I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying as a rule.
All right.
Hold them longer than 7 years.
All right. If you want to let Two Guys Talking Wine continue for another 350 episodes, please continue to support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/twoguystalkingwine. I think we are going to start talking about the Patreon a little bit more. And we have a new sponsor coming up that we're very excited to announce.
Yeah.
But we aren't going to do it right now, so stay tuned.
But we are probably going to get our wish finally. Again.
Oh.
All of this little bit of... what is it? I can't...
Teases?
All these teasers that we're going to... We have had a wish list for 350 episodes, and I don't want to jinx it, so we're just going to leave it alone. But we will announce it the moment it is finalized.
Okay, I am Andre Wine Review on social media.
That's who you are. You're Andre Wine Review on social
media, and sometimes Captain Chardonnay.
I am Michael Pinkus of MichaelPinkusWineReview.com. Andre, thank you for opening the Irie Vineyard Chardonnay. I am still a fan of the Clinette, and I'm sorry about the Roche Audran.
Why? Which, all four of these wines are friggin' bangers.
Like, I really thought that was the one you had told me by Cesar.
You know, if you stick around past this part of Michael and I talking, there's a handful of names of people who produce the podcast, and I wish those were the people here to share these wines with us. If you're not one of those people, you should think about going to patreon.com/twoguystalkingwine and becoming a producer of the show and get mentioned in the credits. And then maybe we will want to drink wine with you too.
That sounds all right. All right, everybody, good night and happy 350.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to Two Guys Talking Wine on iTunes.
Two Guys Talking Wine is produced by Jim Ray, Adam Duran, and Ken Little.